You are listening to Along the Line, brought to you by the Media Freedom Foundation.
The average person will spend 6 months of their life waiting for red lights to turn green. You are listening to Along the Line, brought to you by the Media Freedom Foundation. On today's episode, we explore the relationship between politics and sports. Please listen responsibly.
Smiling back at me across the wide river in the ocean blue. I kept on searching.
Welcome to Along the Line. I'm Dr. Nicholas Baham III. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, an anti-fascist and man who hates waiting behind red lights, Dr. Nolan Higdon, and our sound engineer, the great Janice Domingo. Today we explore the relationship between politics and sports. So, Nolan, tell us, what is going on?
It is no joke. I absolutely cannot stand driving. Like, the Bay Area has killed me.
Do you run red lights?
Oh, yes.
No, but see, you can always be like, but it was green before.
Oh, okay. You know what really, like, rubberneckers. Rubberneckers, man, I want to get out of my car. Like, all the same thing. Someone's staring underneath the hood. Let's move her ass. Everybody's got to get to work.
Yeah. No, that's like the most annoying thing. I propose to build higher median walls to keep people from the other side, rubbernecking to the other side. Like,
that's a great idea.
Absolutely nothing to do with you.
That's a great idea.
Or your
idea.
Lane. Keep your eyes forward. Get the hell out of my way.
And you know what, Janice? In light of one of our more recent broadcasts on climate change, why don't we build those high walls with trees?
Thank you. Oh, there we go.
All right.
Full circle here.
You know, I noticed we were talking about politics and sports today, and as far as like a sports figure in the news, I just thought, any thoughts on Antonio Brown? For our listeners who don't know, this is the former wide receiver for the Steelers who was under contract with the Raiders, but had a bunch of off-the-field problems where he was speaking negatively about the organization publicly, and some of the in the organization were doing the same about him. And so he never actually played a regular season game for the Raiders. They cut him. The Patriots signed him hours later. And now there's
sexual
at least
sexual
assault charge by a woman who was his trainer who reported three different incidents. Mm-hmm. She accuses Brown of.
Did you read the tweets? The text?
Yes, I read the text.
It's brutal, right?
It's like some of them were his apologies, and then some were him gloating about what he had done. It's very
about,
mixed message.
Ejaculating on her back and so forth and so on. Yeah. By the way, his English is brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, from the perspective of a professor, it's like, dude, there's a lot to work on here.
Yeah, some of these...
It's like worse than a first draft.
Yeah. so what did you... I don't know. I think there's a lot here. I mean, I think the obvious thing incorrectly is the patriarchal society and the acceptance of sexism. I think there's the centrality of a celebrity that he gets away with this stuff. But I also kind of want to bring up that something I've always kind of been interested in, and this is not to take away from those other issues, not as important, but that like folks who get thrust into the spotlight and who are not emotionally ready, like those who don't have the cognitive skills to deal with being like a celebrity person. Like, I wonder if Antonio Brown at, 65 will look back at like these tweets and videos and be like, why was I portraying myself like that? You know, I don't know. Do you ask those kind of questions? It's not just him. I'm fascinated with this people in general.
I mean, he fascinates me too on a certain level. I think, there are two takes on Antonio Brown, and I don't know which one. I mean, it may be a both and. One is that he's crazy like a fox. In other words, he always wanted to play for the Patriots. In fact, he knew that the Patriots put in a bid for his services, but the Steelers didn't want to trade him within the division. Okay, so he wound up with, and maybe he got out here to Oakland, and he said, hey, kind of looks like a shit show to me anyway. I'm out, and I want to catch passes from the best quarterback in the game before he turns 50, which I believe will be next year. So, and we're talking about Tom Brady. So there's that angle. But here's the other angle that I don't think that people are thinking about, and that is the politics of head injury and whether any of the behavior that we're seeing from Antonio Brown, which appears to be very cray-cray, has to do with head injury. Nobody's talking about this.
It's almost like you found a way to put politics into sports, Nick.
Oh, right, because that's our topic.
Oh, today, interesting. Yes. Tell me more, Nick.
Great.
Well, listen, I actually want to lead off this broadcast with a. First of all, everybody on this who's listened to our broadcast knows, or may have some sense that I'm a sports junkie. I want to lead off with a quote from a local sportscaster, Damon Bruce. Who always says, look, sports don't develop character or build character, they reveal it. And if we think about this nationally, the national character is racism, inherently political, racist activity. What sports in this country, everybody wants to separate sports and politics. Oh, we shouldn't have, you shouldn't kneel, Kaepernick shouldn't, because you don't want to mix sports and politics. Look, if you don't want to mix sports and politics, then don't have a national anthem, okay? Don't have the Blue Angels flying over the stadium. None of that stuff. And don't sort of clothe your sport in Americana. That being said, sports have all, not just in this country, sports have always been political. And what I hope to do for you, for our listeners in this broadcast, is I hope to be able to give you a number of instances in global sport that demonstrate the intimacy between sports and politics. Now, this doesn't mean that you can't enjoy your sport, but just understand that nothing is without politics. Nothing is without politics, not just in America, but in the world in which we live. And this sense that you're going to somehow divide politics out from everything, whether it's religion or sports or sexuality or whatever, impossible.
I think that's a key point that I think a lot of folks miss, and they blame the people who point it out. That when you're in a democracy, for sure everything is political because everything's tied to our economics, our identity. Our land, our values, our air, and we all have public oversight over it in theory. We're allowed to be able to vote on these things. So everything at some level comes back to us, the voter.
Right.
And even by not making a decision or not participating, you're still, in a sense, showing your voice, right?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a number of really big examples of sports and politics. I'm going to start here with my favorite, the great Jack Johnson. In 1910, Jack Johnson, a black man who came up in the boxing circles in bare knuckle fighting, became the heavyweight champion of the world. He was the first African American to hold the title. This guy was extraordinary because in 1910, remember that our soldiers are about to come back from World War I. A lot of those are black soldiers who had been out in Europe during World War I, actually fighting against Germans and having sex with European women and introducing jazz music. The Harlem Hellfighters, for example, led by the conductor and composer James Reese Europe. This initiated an era of lynching. In that era of lynching, we had the first black heavyweight champion, who was more Ali than Ali would become. Muhammad Ali. We'll talk about Muhammad Ali a little bit later. But this was the template for Muhammad Ali. But he was worse in the sense of, you know, white fears. This was a man who openly dated white women while black men were being lynched on allegations of raping white women. In fact, we passed, you know, you're not supposed to do this. This is in the Constitution. You can't pass a law to specifically affect one person. But there was a law called the Mann Act that specifically prohibited the interstate transportation of white women. This was directed towards Jack Johnson. Again, openly sleeping with, marrying, cavorting with multiple white women. Dude would dress up to the nines. I believe he had a Jaguar on a leash at a certain point in time, his fancy cars, talked a whole bunch of mess. And this is where the expression the great white hope comes from, because what they tried to do was they tried to find a white man who would eventually beat him. Now, eventually this did happen, but everybody knows that Jack Johnson threw the fight. And in that last shot where Jack Johnson actually goes down, you can see him lying on the canvas, allegedly knocked out, but it's an open air arena with sun, and he's raised his hands over his face to block his eyes from the sun. Dude is not knocked out.
This is the James Jeffries fight, right?
Yeah, so...
I want to just tell our listeners, I'm watching it on YouTube right now. You can watch that fight on YouTube.
Absolutely.
3 minutes
All
long.
This stuff is there. In fact, Ken Burns' I invite our listeners to watch Ken Burns' documentary about this guy. He was so extraordinary of an individual. The fact of the matter is most whites in this country just wanted to lynch him. Because people forget, the heavyweight championship of the world, which doesn't mean jack squat now, but the heavyweight championship of the world was royalty. It was like you were a king when you had that spot. You had a bully pulpit that others didn't have. Arguably, your voice was as strong as maybe someone like the President of the United States. You were super badass. So that's my first instance of this. This is deeply racial politics around the heavyweight championship of the world and the promotion of a great white hope. 1936, the Olympics in Berlin. These are remembered for the athletic performance of Jesse Owens, who lived from 1913 to 1980.
Just to be real quick for our listeners, earlier we said James Jeffries. It was actually Jess Willard.
I'm also thinking about he did have a fight with an undefeated white heavyweight champion, James Jeffries.
Right.
Jeffries had previously retired, and rather than face Johnson and give him a shot at the title, he came out of retirement to fight him. So he could have fought him when he held the title.
Willard's where he took the dive.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, it's interesting because Jeffries, you're thinking about Jeffries because before the fight, Jeffries said, I am going into this fight for the sole purpose of proving that a white man is better than a Negro. They fought in Reno, Nevada, July 4th. Think about that. Independence Day. Think about the political symbolism behind it. Do not fucking tell me that sports and politics are not intertwined. July 4th, 1910, Johnson, in fact, won that fight by a TKO in the 15th round. His victory sparked a nationwide wave of riots in which numerous African Americans were murdered. Okay? According to PBS, newspaper editorials warned Johnson and the black community not to be too proud. And Congress, as I mentioned, this is another act, they passed an act banning the interstate transport of fight films for the fear that images of Johnson beating his white opponents would provoke further unrest. Yeah.
Another example of politics there.
Right. Boom. Yeah. Mic drop right there. I could just stop the show right there. But we'll go forward.
All right, let's do it.
1936, Jesse Owens. Laying waste to Hitler's claim of Aryan, a.k.a. white, superiority. By the way, I don't know if our listeners know this, but Aryan has nothing to do with white. The Aryans were actually from India and were a nomadic group of warriors. What we get from them currently is that they produced a text called the Rig Veda, which is the basis of Vedanic scriptures in Hinduism. Another one, the Melbourne Olympics. The setting for many national political stands, with at least seven nations boycotting for various reasons. You had the Netherlands, Spain, and Switzerland, who boycotted to protest the USSR. Many of our younger listeners will not know what that is. That is the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Their invasion of Hungary. Hungary itself took a different approach, actually, though, opting to go to the games. Fascinating, right? The Hungarian water polo team actually wound up facing the Soviets in a vicious match that had to be halted due to fighting amongst the players. Hello. Now, we're talking about international politics, right? The athletes are well aware of it. You're getting in that pool and you're thinking, man, this dude, he's got a relative maybe who's killing some of my relatives. So what am I going to do in the pool? I'm going to take his ass out. Okay? All right. We mentioned Muhammad Ali. Okay? Muhammad Ali said that he would not fight a people who had done him no harm.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality, raped and killed my mother and father. What, I'm going to shoot them for what? How can I go shoot them? Them little poor little black people, little babies and children and women. How can I shoot them poor people? Just take me to jail.
And Ali suffered. He was stripped of his title, and for three years in his prime, he was unable to fight. At the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City, Tommy Smith and John Carlos wanted to make a statement, so they took off their shoes to protest poverty. They wore beads and a scarf to protest lynchings. And along with the white Australian Peter Norman, who asked actually what he could do to support them as they all three took the podium, they wore human rights badges. Carlos and Smith each wore a black glove. Reportedly, actually, it was Norman who gave them the idea to each wear one of Smith's gloves. As the U.S. national anthem played, Smith and Carlos bowed their heads and raised their fists in the Black Power salute.
It was done for a reason, a social justice brought by ignorance of man, of those who did not believe in human rights, or who wouldn't give the necessity of thought in dealing with that particular human rights. And I think it's very important. The victory stand was, you might say, a pinnacle of what I had to do, or what people had to see before they could believe that we really understood.
Also in the 1968 Olympics, the gymnast Koslovska was far and away the best gymnast in the world. In the 1964 Summer Olympics in Tokyo, for example, she won the overall title and took the gold and the balance beam in the vault, in addition to a silver medal for a team event. She defended her vault title in the 1966 World Championship and won a team gold. In 1968, though, she was Czechoslovakian. This was a challenging year for Czechoslovakia. There was a democratization movement known as the Prague Spring that was gaining support. Then in August, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics invaded the country, attempting to crush Czechoslovakia's democratic ambitions. And in 1968, Koslovska was a vocal supporter of democracy in her own home country. She was a critic of communism and of the Soviet invasion. And by the way, what did she do? She absolutely kicked Soviet ass in the 68 Olympics. Right. She whipped that red ass even redder. In 1969, African-American players on the University of Wyoming football team decided to wear black armbands during a game against Brigham Young University, BYU. A year previously, BYU players had taunted them with racial epithets. The players also wanted to protest the Mormon Church's refusal to allow black men into the priesthood. By the way, the Mormons didn't really get with the program until the 70s.
Right.
This group is referred to as the Black 14. In 1970, nine African-American football players at Syracuse University, the Orange Men, took a stand to protest institutionalized racism and demand equality in the treatment of black and white athletes. The nine talented student athletes became known as the Syracuse Nine. Originally, they called them the Syracuse Eight because apparently it's hard to count Negroes. Coming off of a tumultuous decade for politics and sports, the Nixon administration in 1971 decided to use sports to generate some positive PR. Some of you who are old enough remember this. It was called ping pong diplomacy. Remember
that's
that?
Right, yes.
Yes. After the ping pong diplomacy actually led months later to Nixon going into China. Boom. Sports and politics. Okay. I don't think that I need to remind our listeners of the 1976 Olympics in the 1972 Olympics in Munich, okay, in which Jewish athletes were murdered as a part of Palestinian protests, for Palestinian liberation. We should also mention the opening of the 1976 Olympics in Montreal, where 28 African countries announced that they would boycott to protest New Zealand sending its national rugby teams to tour South Africa in the wake of the government's massacre of 350 anti-apartheid protesters. After the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, President Carter actually called on the United States, some of you will remember this too, on the United States and other nations to boycott the upcoming Summer Olympics in Moscow. In the end, the Soviet Union did not withdraw from Afghanistan. It really helped to bring down the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. But 55 countries, including Canada, Japan, and West Germany, joined the U.S. in a full boycott. 1996, Atlanta Olympics.
Which one was the Miracle on Ice?
Oh, that's a good question.
Was that 80?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that was the... Yeah.
And that's inherently political.
Yeah.
I mean, we still wear that, you know, in terms of our defeat on the ice against this dominant Soviet team. 1996 Atlanta Olympics. Eric Rudolph, people will remember, he wasn't an athlete.
I always remember Richard Jewell from the 1996 Olympics.
Oh, you do?
You remember him?
No.
The supposed bomber behind the Atlanta bombing?
This is Eric Rudolph.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Eric Rudolph.
Yeah, Jewell was the guy they thought did it.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. To protest abortion, he was protesting abortion. Rudolph detonated a bomb in Centennial Olympic Park. Two people died, the American spectator Alice Hawthorne and Turkish journalist Meli Uzunyol. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And more than 100 were wounded. And you're right. The more likely this attack, many more would have died except for the actions of Richard Jewell. Richard Jewell, who you referred to earlier, was a security guard who discovered the bomb and helped clear the area before the explosion. 1994, Kathy Freeman had been in the political spotlight since 1994 when she sparked controversy for running a victory lap with both the Aboriginal and Australian flags. You remember this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, Australia, all eyes were on the track superstar whose celebrity brought greater attention to the political issues affecting Aboriginal Australians. Freeman pulled off the performance of a lifetime, winning the gold medal in the 400 meters in her home country. You notice a theme here, athletes who take on the political. Why? Okay, so the rest of us don't understand that politics are always a part of sports. But guess what? Athletes understand this.
Yes. You keep talking about the Olympics. You know, something I'm going to post on my Twitter page for listeners. There's a great picture shot of what these Olympic parks look like today.
Yeah.
And talk about the politics of it. All the tax revenue and land and public lands that go into these parks, and then they're abandoned after they're over.
Same thing with the World Cup. Dave Zirin, if you guys, it's not really usually my thing to advertise other podcasts, but this will be a podcast that you and I will be writing about in our forthcoming book about podcasts. But Dave Zirin's The Collision deals with sports and politics in every single broadcast. And Zirin has written about the disaster that was the Brazilian World Cup and the money that was wasted, money that could have gone to help out poor folk in Brazil, in the favelas.
I think I always like the kind of the punk rock culture of podcasts. They broadcast each other, have each other on. It's kind of cool.
We definitely fit in that punk rock culture.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if any of you have heard how I refer to our current president. That's very punk rock.
Oh, yeah. Dumpster fire.
Yeah,
Schindler.
Dumpster fire. Exactly. Yeah. It's like when the Sex Pistols, what was the Sex Pistols song about the Queen?
Oh, God Save the Queen?
Yeah. That's in that
and
theme.
And the fascist regime.
That's right. There you go. All right. You got it going. You get that sort of Johnny Rotten type thing going there. I love it. All right. So in 2002, we'll talk about some other things that are non-Olympics, okay? In 2002, in the wake of 9/11, people will remember that the Arizona Cardinal football player Pat Tillman put his professional football career on the line to enlist in the United States military. He died in service. Jackie Robinson, of course, going back to 1947 when he broke the color barrier, playing for the Brooklyn Dodgers, facing a stream of racial insults and threats. He was the rookie of the year in his first season. In 1949, he won the league MVP award. This is where baseball figured it out. If we want to win, we need blacks. Same thing happened in college football. In fact, you know, it's legendary that some of these college football teams, when they saw black players out there running all over the field, they started, some of these racist fans started chanting, "We want one. We want one. One."
They want their token.
Yeah, they want their token.
Keep their balance on campus.
By the way, do you know that professional football is almost, I think it's about 78% black?
I was going to ask you about, something about the universities. That, do you know any history of that? Like, did the desire for blacks on sports team play any role in traditionally white colleges opening up more seats for black students? I don't know. I've never heard that history.
Not so much. I mean, you can say that there's a collateral effect academically. I don't know that anybody's been able to track that.
Okay.
In fact, there are a number of schools to this day that are simply using black bodies for sport and are not substantively interested in educating these folks. I would say to you also that occurs at the high school level as well. Having taught at a Big Ten university briefly at Indiana University when I was getting my degree, it was very clear there. I mean, the athletes didn't go to class. I had football players who would walk in the room and they would say, "You know how this is going to go, right?" I mean, straight mafia. And of course, me, you know what I do when I face things like that is I just act stupid. I'm like, "No, I don't know how this is going to go." I actually had a student tell me one time that this was the only time he was going to see me. And I asked him rather facetiously, I said, "Well, where's my envelope?" I mean, is either going to be cash in the envelope or 50-yard line tickets? Which is it going to be? You know what he did? He just found another professor. He found another class.
I was going to say, I wonder if that's how that works in those. They find which professors are in, which aren't.
No, they don't pay you off. They just find another professor that's in, who's into the whole rah-rah thing. I wasn't into the whole rah-rah thing.
Is that why you have that box?
I had bills to pay, dude.
Is that why you have that box in Indiana University you're always inviting me to?
That's right.
Is that where that comes from?
That's right, yeah.
I remember this.
I'm all about the suitcase or the envelope of cash.
You are a smooth criminal. I could see you walking out with a suitcase.
My last day here at Cal State East Bay. But, you know, we're at a state university. If I got an envelope of cash, I'll probably only have $5 in the day.
I was going to say that on a Starbucks card.
Most of my students are starving. Exactly. Call it a day with the Starbucks card. All right, let's keep going. Billie Jean King, Equality for Women. Nobody, Battle of the Sexes, right? Great movie about this came out a couple of years ago. Robbie Rogers, the first gay athlete in a U.S. major professional sport. He played with the Los Angeles Galaxy of the Major League Soccer, U.S. Major League Soccer. I don't blame any of our listeners for not even knowing that such a thing exists.
Hey,
go ahead.
So you're talking about Billie Jean King.
Yeah.
I think we have a video on that, so we'll listen to that now.
Mm-hmm. I was outed, and I would never out anybody on anything, and I'd grown up in a homophobic environment. So it was really something, this is the biggest struggle I've ever had in my life. And I told my PR person, and I told my lawyer, I want to have a press conference, and I'm going to tell the truth. And they said, "You cannot do that. No one's ever done that." I said, "I don't care what people have done before me. I am telling you, I have to tell the truth." I told the truth at this press conference. Of course, you could have heard a pin drop, because I said, "Yes, I did have an affair with Marilyn Barnett." And they went, "Oh!" You'd hear me go, "Oh!" like that. The truth always sets you free, eventually. I did lose all my money overnight in 24 hours. Every single endorsement I had, I lost it all in 24 hours. But it's okay. It's like you just start over. But I would never out somebody. Oh, my God, that's just horrible. Not just with anything. Everyone has to decide when they're ready to do something. Each human being.
What strikes me about the Billie Jean King thing that I always really liked, where they went into sports and politics, was how pro wrestling dove into this with Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
And remember, Kaufman did. He went to the state fairs. He would call out women, and he would say these sexist things to annoy the crowd. He'd wrestle these women. Then he'd always have one another plant woman who would come out and beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so Andy, he'd say he's a big celebrity from Hollywood. How could this woman put her hands on me?
Yeah.
"You know what, Mr. Lawler? I've heard all these things you've been saying about me on television. You want to wrestle me? You want to wrestle me, Miami style? All right, fine. I'm not afraid of you, Mr. Lawler, because let me tell you something. True, I only wrestle women, but I've wrestled women that are a lot bigger and stronger than you. Matter of fact, they're probably smarter than you because you don't have any brains. You're from Memphis, Tennessee. All you do is plow the fields and farm and the farmer. Is that how you talk in Memphis, Tennessee, Mr. Lawler? Boo. See, Mr. Lawler, you don't have any brains. I am from Hollywood. I have the brains. That's how I win my matches. I say the bigger they come, the harder they fall.
Andy was a master of what I call the comedy of abjection. Something that Dave Chappelle is also very good at, where they force you to laugh at the very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But by doing that, they actually bring out a sense in you of, hey, right, we've got, in Andy's case, hey, right, we've got gender problems in this country. Yeah. So this like sexist freak up here is sort of high, and I'm laughing at that, right? But in the comedy of abjection, you first laugh at the joke, and then you laugh at the fact that you're laughing at the joke because you know you shouldn't be laughing at it. It's something very uncomfortable in the society. And this, in my opinion, causes you later sort of critically think through these kinds of things. Yeah, this is kind of fucked up.
I think he's always really like often underappreciated. He's one of my favorite comedy geniuses.
Yeah,
so funny.
I do appreciate. What was the band that that crafted that Andy Kaufman song?
Oh, Man on the Moon, R.E.M.
Yeah. Rapid Eye Movement. Let's bring us a little bit closer up to the modern times, shall we? The Miami Heat. LeBron James, when he was a member of the Miami Heat, tweeted a picture of the Miami players wearing hoodies with their heads bowed in support of Trayvon Martin. Martin, as our listeners will remember, was the teenager who was shot and killed by George Zimmerman, a neighborhood watch volunteer and wannabe cop. In February 2012, the boy was armed with a bag of Skittles. LeBron James, again, wearing an I Can't Breathe t-shirt when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And here, he was dealing in particular with the July 2014 murder of Eric Garner, who died during a confrontation with the New York police. His last words caught on camera were when he was saying, I can't breathe. Michael Sam, who kissed his boyfriend on live TV. Homosexuality for many decades and even now has still been a taboo subject in the overly homophobic Major League Football or the Football League's rooms. By the way, you'd be surprised. There are more gay players in the NFL than you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little sidebar here. I used to work when I was coming up in the world trying to save money for my master's degree. I worked in the hotel industry. And one of the things that our servers would always tell us when football teams would come into San Francisco to play against the 49ers or to play against the Raiders, I mean, usually the Raiders' opponents would stay in Oakland, but for the 49ers, they would stay at the Marriott in San Francisco. They would come back and tell us how many times they got hit on by players from teams that were out to play the 49ers. It was very, very common. There's a lot of closet gay activity within the NFL. And for anybody who's read the work of the Berkeley folklorist Alan Dundas many years ago, I think in the 70s, wrote a piece on homosexuality in football.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's been some high-profile cases. Wasn't it Cordell Stewart eventually came out?
Yes.
Aaron Hernandez. Been bisexual, right?
Yeah.
That came out after.
Yeah, Michael Sam was a defensive end from Missouri, and he basically was one of the first to actually come out. He was drafted. He was the 249th overall pick by the St. Louis Rams, and he celebrated being picked by kissing his boyfriend, Vito Camisano, live on ESPN. Sam never outed anyone after being interviewed, but he said, I am not the only gay person in the NFL. I'm just saying that there are a lot of us. I respect the players that did reach out to me and had the courage to tell me that they were also gay. We know that American Indians have challenged the Washington football team's racist football name. I respect actually what Dave Zirin has been doing with this on the Collision, where they just don't mention the name. They just say the Washington football team. But we know that their owner refuses to back down from that name. Colin Kaepernick. Okay, so this is where it really gets capped off. A lot of, I think, our public believes that sports don't need to be involved in politics because of the dumpster fire and because of his tweets about black players. Look, let me make it clear to our listeners. Sports have not only always been involved in politics, but what you're seeing from the dumpster fire here in his critique of these athletes is strictly because, not because he dislikes sports and politics. He's not sophisticated enough to understand this history. He doesn't like blacks. That's the problem. In particular, Colin Kaepernick, who, by the way, was told to kneel by a service member. So he listened. So this whole thing about, oh, Kaepernick doesn't respect the military, our great military, and so forth and so on. Kaepernick actually took his cue from a member of the United States military, and that's why he knelt.
I think it's something that can unify this team. It's something that can unify this country. You know, if we have these real conversations that are uncomfortable for a lot of people, if we have these conversations, there's a better understanding where both sides are coming from. And if we reach common ground and can understand what everybody's going through, we can really affect change and make sure that everybody's treated equally and has the same freedom.
When someone does something that's contradictory to their own position, it can often reveal their own hatred, racism, and prejudices. So to keep this with sports, I mean, I think of it was about 10 years ago, there was a proposal for a sports commercial for a gay online dating service. And the commercial basically was going to have like enemy teams, you know, like the Vikings and Packers fans sit on a couch and they both reach for popcorn at the same time and look mm-hmm. in each other's eyes, blah, blah. The NFL ended up not choosing the commercial. And it wasn't because they didn't have the money to pay for it. The NFL didn't want to broadcast it. Similarly, but again, the NFL and its fans are predicated on this idea of freedom and capitalism and consumerism, which this company was doing. Similarly with Kaepernick, here's a guy using that freedom of expression, respecting service people at their behest, doing this in the freedom of his own will in a capitalist market where he worked hard to get the position that he had. And yet those things don't matter, but they would matter in any other context for these people. But when a black person does it, you disregard it. And that sort of contradictory prejudice, and that contradiction illustrates their own prejudice, their own hatred against black folks.
And by the way, you started out this broadcast with Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown is going to play football in spite of the fact that he may have raped somebody. Just want to point that out. You can play football if you've committed a rape, but you can't play football if you've knelt. Think about that. That's the message that's been sent out.
You can't stand up for social justice.
Yeah. And the, you know, for any of us who watch the NFL, there are so many frickin' crap quarterbacks out there right now. Now, you can argue Kaepernick was mostly a runner and he wasn't great at throwing. He wasn't entirely that accurate, yada, yada, whatever. There are crap quarterbacks in this league right now. They're dudes who should not be strapping it on and playing. Kaepernick's better than these guys. But he's never going to get a job in this league again.
And by the way, you're talking about starters. There's also second and third strings. So
that's,
I mean,
right.
So there's
and
plenty of positions.
Squad.
Practice squad. There's plenty of positions for Kaepernick. No, it shows how a corporate organization can collude together to block mm-hmm. someone out. I know conservatives are always terrified of government creating laws that create inequities and block people out. But here's an example of corporate owners doing it.
Mm-hmm. Now, if Kaepernick had just slapped a woman, maybe beaten her up in an elevator, dragged her by the hair.
Yeah, news for someone. You could murder.
He would be playing.
You could murder and play. Ray Lewis played till
That's
the end of his
correct.
Career.
He
just
That's
can't kneel for social justice.
He was there. Now, whether he murdered the person, I don't
or
know.
Hit
but
the
he
body.
Was there for the murder.
Yeah.
He was there for the murder, which makes you what? A conspirator in the murder. And Ray Lewis is not only was he allowed to continue his NFL career, but he's a venerated figure who shows up on broadcasts. His opinion is sought after. Nobody wants to freaking hear about Kaepernick. They don't want to hear his voice or anything.
I mean, just keep it with quarterbacks. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger beating women.
Oh, total
able
rapist.
To stay in the league.
Total rapist. It turns out that all those guys, Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger, that's a rape club. Those guys were in lockstep with one another because they're all part of the same rape club. Let me continue here. I've got just a few more incidents of the connections between sports and politics, okay? In April of 2010, the state of Arizona passed a new immigration law in an effort to stop rampant illegal immigration from Mexico. The law was passed in the Arizona state legislature with strong bipartisan support and was actually modeled on existing federal immigration statutes. However, a lot of people in Arizona saw the law as racist and un-American, including Robert Sarver, owner of the NBA's Phoenix Suns. So in response, this is a conscious owner. And by the way, the NBA is better at this than the NFL. They'll let you protest. And we've seen that with LeBron James. But in response, Sarver rallied his team to make a political statement on national television during a May 5th, 2010 playoff game between the Phoenix Suns and the San Antonio Spurs. Sarver had the entire team wear jerseys with the logo Los Suns on it. The media reported that the entire Suns team unanimously decided to wear the jerseys, and the game on May 5th that year had the bonus of occurring on Cinco de Mayo, a major Mexican holiday. Imagine that, right? We have Brandon Marshall, who has campaigned for mental health. Brandon Marshall from the NFL. He himself was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder in 2011 and has been outspoken about his own struggles with mental illness. Bill Russell, if we go back again in time, you notice I'm skipping all over time, basketball. Bill Russell, NBA Hall of Famer, former Celtics player, coach. During his tenure with the Celtics in the 50s and the 60s, he won 11 championships as a player, a record that still stands to this day. But he was also a political activist during the 60s. He campaigned for civil rights and equality for black people as hard as he played basketball. And he participated in the 1963 March on Washington and was able to continue his career. Jim Brown, former NFL player, Cleveland Brown, who quit at the height of his career to pursue a movie career. Why did he do it? Because he felt like he was being owned by the ownership of the Browns. Jim Brown, probably one of the greatest running backs in all of NFL history. He started in the 1960s a black economic union, which helped black professional athletes establish their own businesses after their playing careers ended. And finally, I want to bring up Sean Green, the baseball player, a Los Angeles Dodger. He was probably one of the greatest sluggers in all of Major League Baseball. He once hit 4 home runs in a single game, which remains a league record, driving in 100 runs 4 times and scoring 100 runs another 4 times in his career. He won a Gold Glove and a Silver Slugger Award during his career from 1993 to 2007. Green was Jewish and devoted to his faith, so much so that he refused to play baseball on Yom Kippur each year. He would spend Yom Kippur fasting and praying. Now, the interesting thing about this is Yom Kippur typically occurs in late September when his team was often in a playoff race. But that didn't faze him. Neither did the protests of many of his teammates and fans. He refused to pick up his bat and play on the Jewish holiday because faith meant more to him than baseball. Look, I've given you well over 20, what have I given you, about 29 instances, 28, 29 instances of the intertwining of sports and politics. And by the way, it's not all about blacks, okay? Sean Green is Jewish. Okay, well, I talked to you about a Czechoslovakian gymnast.
Women.
Women, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone, Aborigines, everyone is invested
in this. Gay couples and stuff.
Right. So, again, I go back to Damon Bruce's quote. Sports don't build character. They reveal it. And often that character is a political character.
All right. I want to encourage our listeners to check out our previous shows at projectcensor.org/ATL and youtube.com/alongtheline. You can subscribe to us on Instagram at Along the Line Show. Send us an email, alongthelinepodcast@gmail.com. Nick, that was a great show. Really enjoyed it. And I hope the folks will keep tuning in, keep subscribing. You've been listening to Along the Line, brought to you by the Media Freedom Foundation. My co-hosts, as always, are Dr. Dreadlocks, Nicholas Bayham III, and our editor and sound engineer, Janice Domingo. Mickey Huff is our producer. Dylan Mazzaga is our creative director. Adam Armstrong is our webmaster. You can listen to all of our previous content at projectcensor.org/ATL, youtube.com/alongtheline. And you can contact us on Twitter. I'm at Nolan_Higdon. Nick is at Dr. Dreadlocks, DocTorDredlocks, and Janice is at J_Nice44. You listened responsibly.